Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz. If you didn't know it by now, you're listening to my podcast. So thanks for that. This week on the good old podcast, a super duper awesome, affable chap by the name of Justin Long. He is somebody I've talked to only a few times, but each and every time, you know, the certain people you get kind of get a sense you share a sensibility, a worldview, a sense of humor, most importantly, and Justin certainly fits that bill. He is, of course, starring in a new film that belies that sweet demeanor. He's in a gloriously insane movie called Tusk, which is about to come out, in which he is the star, alongside Genesis Rodriguez and Haley Joel Osment and the amazing Michael Parks. And it's written and directed by crazy Kevin Smith. I say crazy because you'll hear us talk a little bit about the film in this, but suffice it to say, this is a film in which Justin goes through hell and is turned into a walrus. Yeah. So look forward to that. It is crazy, bizarre, and really disturbing, and has haunted me for the last few weeks. So if that's your bag, go check out Tusk. It is certainly unique and fun, and also has Johnny Depp in it, which the cat's out of the bag. That's public knowledge, so I'm going to say that, because that's kind of cool. He's got a sizable role in it. So anyway, Justin popped by the office, did a crazy little bit for me and for an after-hours segment you guys should check out next week, starring Jessica Chastain and James McAvoy, and a little cameo by Justin. But the main event here was the podcast, a long conversation here about all things Tusk and Galaxy Quest and our mutual love of Woody Allen movies. Justin's a good dude. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. As always, hit me up on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz. So many cool guests to come next week. If all goes according to plan, one of my favorite filmmakers. I don't want to jinx it, but it's going to be a good one. But for now, here he is, Mr. Justin Long. Welcome to my creepy white big office. God. This is not normally where I do my conversations, but because we're making you do a green screen bit after this.
We're the ether covered rags.
Exactly. Jesus. This is THX1138, the office.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Exactly. Thanks for coming by, though.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We were just talking. We were both in Toronto. Sadly, we did not cross paths.
Nope.
But I was telling you I was privileged enough to be, I think maybe even the first journalist, I don't know what that says about what they think of me, to see Tusk.
Test it out on Josh. If he doesn't like it, we're just not releasing it.
Exactly. In what may be the most fucked up movie of the year,
Tusk. I hope it is.
Let's hope so, right?
Yeah. Because the new Step Up movie had already come out.
Right, and so. How to Train Your Dragon 2 Disappointed. It wasn't as fucked up as people were expecting.
Exactly. this one's pretty, it's out there. I don't even know how to encapsulate it. People have been like, oh, so is it a comedy, is it a horror?
Right.
It's a little sprinkling of everything, but it's really just, it's weird. And it might help to explain a little bit about how it was conceived.
This is a new one.
Yeah.
Twitter was really involved in this one. What happened?
Yeah, very much so. Kevin Smith, who wrote the writer-director, Kevin Smith, he had been, since his last movie, he's been doing pretty much just podcasting. Right. And on one of his podcasts, they started talking about a story that was about an ad that was taken out in this British version of Craigslist called Gumtree. Right. And the ad was something along the lines of, I'm looking for someone to come stay at my place, free room and board. The only stipulation is you have to dress as a walrus for 2 hours during the day. A very common
request.
And I guess enough people responded so that he had to post a follow-up one that said, thank you very much for all the submissions, but I found no walrus. So this and the whole thing turned out to be a hoax, but before Kevin knew that, he just thought it was the greatest thing, and he started, because it kind of is. And he, in a fog of THC, he kind of expounded on it a little bit and thought it would be just make a great movie. But he couldn't tell. He said, would this be a great horror movie if this happened? And only instead of a suit for 2 hours, it was like permanent.
Right.
And he said, if you think this will be a great movie, hashtag walrus yes. And if you think this is ridiculous and should never be done, hashtag walrus no. And the next day on Twitter, there were like an unbelievable amount of walrus. Yes. But then you think, like, well, yeah, but they're his followers.
Right.
So there's that bias. And, like, I'm not second-guessing it. It's a little too late for that.
Well, this is the greatest thing to come out of Twitter, outside of the ALS challenge and Stop Coney and all that.
Yeah.
I would put this in the top three.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And maybe the Arab Spring. Maybe the situation in Tunisia is similar.
Let's say top 10.
Top 10, okay.
Okay, let's come to an agreement.
I don't want to split hairs here.
But what do you think it says about Kevin that he comes to you? Okay, he writes a script, he comes up with a story, and he comes to you. And what do you think it says about you that you say yes? Because
the first part of that, I don't know what it says about how he sees me, and I'd like to think it's a positive thing, but I'm also I also don't necessarily have the greatest self-esteem, and so I think there have been moments where I thought, does this mean maybe subconsciously that he doesn't really like me, that he would subject me to this kind of thing? Because what happens is my character is pretty gruesome in a creative way, but it's
horrendous. Awful.
Yeah.
It's like, to say a worse nightmare is to not even, like, who would have this nightmare?
Exactly. That's giving way too much value to nightmares.
Yeah.
That's insulting to nightmares. Right. Nightmares are like, we're not this fucked up. We wouldn't do this. Yeah, it's that. And so, but then of course I was also really, I was so flattered that he asked me to do it. If you ever want an actor to do anything, you just lead with flattery. And,
right.
And he sent me this email that was very much that. It was just flattering and flattering that he had asked me. And so I went into the script knowing that I was going to do it regardless. Because
right.
I'd also worked with Kevin I just loved working with him. And he would give me he was just one of those guys. He would give me a lot of freedom and I trusted him, so I was going to do it regardless.
Do you think it's just he has lucky body chemistry in that, you know, the old adage is that pot doesn't necessarily make somebody ambitious, and yet he is like, he's 6 podcasts like a week, he's got like a movie a year at least.
He's the
like,
most prolific, yeah, as is Seth Rogen. Seth is an
right.
incredibly productive guy. And
they're just the right strain of it.
They must be, because Kevin started smoking. Kevin never smoked before Seth. Seth introduced Kevin to weed, I've actually smoked, I think, Seth's stuff, and it's really strong. As is Kevin's. Like, the night I went to meet him to discuss the movie, and I took just one hit of this stuff just to kind of, like, fit in and, like, be cool, because it's Kevin Smith, and, like, I feel like it would be rude not to.
Right.
It's like when you go to a foreign, you know, country and you turn
the customs
down
the food. Of the, yeah.
Yes, it's rude, and out of respect to Kevin, I smoked, and I was like, and he just went through like 2.5 blunts, like they were, just like they were cigarettes. Like he was.
Does he do that during production too?
I'm not gonna say no.
Well, then you kind of just said yes.
I'm not gonna say yes. I don't know how he does it. I mean, like I was the next day. I was like, oh, I had these ideas about some of the things in the script, and so we were discussing a lot of the script, and the next day I thought, like, oh, he's not going to remember any of that. Like, that was just such a waste of time. It was fun, but like, and within 4 or 5 days, he had implemented all of these things we talked about so perfectly, so in such a funny, great
right.
way. I don't know. I don't get it, because I wish I could. I smoke, and I'm like, let's watch Seinfeld and go to bed. You know?
But, what's amazing to me about the movie, like, because like you hear like the log line, you hear the description of it, it's like your mind can't even fathom what it looks like. It's the specificity of like what happens to you that is like, it is beyond the pale.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I mean, like, so did you guys like go through like when you saw like what it was gonna, how it was gonna
design,
manifest? Yeah. Like, what did you think?
It was Robert Kurtzman, who's an incredible special effects guy. He's worked everything from Evil Dead 2. Dust Till Dawn. So I was like a nerdy fan of his going into it, and he did it so fast. It also, from the time the idea was conceived to the time we showed up on set was a couple months.
Right.
And it was like, it was nothing. And so he had very little time to work on this, which makes what he did that much more impressive. But the issue that they had that was prevailed up until like a couple days before we shoot about the suit, about the whole thing, because I don't want to give too much away, but...
Right.
The issue was about the mustache, and because I, not mine, I had grown my mustache A, because I just felt like he was like a mustache kind of guy.
Right.
He was like kind of like a Bruno Kirby, like gay. I don't know. He struck me as like he was like a DJ and kind of smarmy, and like right. I just think that was the persona that he had created for himself was a mustache guy. And I had always wanted to have a mustache in a movie, and I thought it was like good foreshadowing for any potential walrus-related trauma that I might suffer.
Right.
And what I realized is that walruses, something that I do have in common with walruses is that we grow similar facial, we have similar facial hair patterns. I have very strong follicles, very bristly, like wiry follicles, but they're sparse.
Right.
And if you look at a walrus, you see that they have a similar, and nothing down here.
Oh, interesting.
I can't grow a thing down. I don't know, you'd be sorry. I don't know what it worked for.
I didn't know what the proper response was. I just feel sympathy.
God bless you. No, the sympathy is correct. Yeah, sorry is right. Because it's weird. And it's like, I God bless my girlfriend for hanging in there the whole shoot. Because it was.
Well, this is actually literally was my next question. It's like, has your girlfriend seen the finished film and has she touched you since seeing it?
That's when I knew she loved me.
That's true love.
Yeah, and even worse, she had to suffer through, for this pilot I did, I had a bowl cut. I was like, but it was one of those great old, like, 70s style, like Janice from Three's Company.
Right.
It was under here, like Connie Selica. Yep. Didn't she have one of those?
Yep.
And that was even more horrifying than the mustache. It was a perfect bowl cut going in the back, and the hairstylist kept, his name was Calvin, he kept saying, look at you, you're bouncing and behaving. What is that? He's like, finally, I said, is that your catchphrase for things? He's like, oh, it's a commercial from the 80s. Don't you remember that one? From like 1979. I was like, how old do you think I am? Thanks a lot, bouncing and behaving. But it was. But the mustache was, she put up with it.
So the, like I said, so Toronto, which you and I both just came from, it had its like big world premiere there. It's got to be like immediately vault to one of the top five premieres of one of your films ever. From what all accounts, it was like insane, right?
Yeah, it was the best. It was so fun. It was the perfect way to watch that movie.
Yeah.
It was a Midnight Madness screening, so people were. It was midnight, and people were in fact. There was a lot of madness.
Right.
It was great. It was, and they gave away all these walrus masks and. Yeah, I mean they're doing a lot of interesting tie-ins with the movie. A24 is distributing it, and they're just geniuses with the marketing they're doing.
Are we allowed to talk about by now the gentleman in the film also?
I think so.
It's out now.
It's kind
right?
of out now.
Okay, so Johnny Depp is in it, and so there have been rumors about this prior to me seeing it a little while back. But I wasn't. It's not just a cameo. Like like full on like major role.
It's a big part. He's in the movie. He only worked 2 days, but
that's amazing.
Kevin really made it. You know, stretched it out, and he used him to great effect.
Yeah,
he's in it. Yeah.
So you didn't get to do too much with him, sadly.
No, unfortunately, I came both days they were shooting. Just to watch, because it was like how many opportunities do you have to see that? Not only was it like Johnny Depp, but it was Johnny Depp doing a great,
crazy
Johnny Depp character that I hadn't seen him do in a while, and it felt like, I don't want to speak for him, but it felt like he had a lot of fun doing it. It seemed like he did.
Right.
He really relished doing this. It was a weird character. Great, though, really inventive and... well, you saw it.
Totally. And apparently that character is continuing in the new film he's doing now.
Yes, so he had such a good time doing the character and working on it that Kevin's doing a kind of a continuation of the movie. He's taking two of the minor characters from Tusk and giving them their own movie. And Johnny's character from Tusk is going to play a more prominent role.
He's like written, like, you know, obviously there was the View Askew universe in the beginning, and now it's like this whole separate...
It's very askew.
Yes, this is the super askew. This is the fucked up askew.
Askew is such a gentle word for what it is.
Wait, I heard you invoke Vince Vaughn as inspiration a little bit for.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about the guy I'm playing. I play this guy Wallace Brighton, who's a podcaster, and he's a born storyteller. He's just a great storyteller, and I kept thinking about Vince Vaughn because he is of all the people I've ever known, he is. The greatest storyteller I think I've ever met. He's just a natural, you know, he's always going on about it. He spins a great tale. And he would get mad at me for saying that. Tale, I don't talk like that. You're trying to make me sound more interesting and weird than I am. But I kept hearing his voice.
Yeah.
And we would do a fair amount of improvising, and for some reason, when I think about great, improv and great funny improv, I go right to Vince because he's the best. I mean, he's a, he and Fred Armisen, some of these guys are just, they're geniuses, you know, and he's just got that very fertile mind. And so I tried to, I didn't know I was doing it, but I was listening to some of the movie and hearing it, seeing it for the first time, and I'm it's like, oh, I hear Vince in there.
So it's funny, even from my perspective in talking to Vince over the years, like, he's the best, like, passive, aggressive, slow build, even in my interactions with him. It's just like, I never know. Like, the first time I talked to him, I was like, I think he might hit me. Like, I'm pissing him off because I'm trying to give it back to him, and I feel like he might hit me.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure.
Yeah, but it's done in this, there's a warmth to it that when you get to know him, you'll see it comes out in very subtle ways, but it's there. I mean, like, it's all done. If he goes with you, like, down one of those rants, it means he likes you. He's, like, going toe-to-toe with you.
Yeah. He's a treat. So, okay, so last time I spoke to you, you came by. We talked about, among other things, probably a big cultural touchstone for both of us. We're virtually the same age, so Back to the Future was a big one for both of us.
Yeah, the biggest.
Right?
I mean, I've been talking a lot about, so much so that I forgot about this, but people, a lot of Canadians, we were just in Toronto with the movie, as you mentioned, a lot of Canadians, there were some Canadian jokes in the movie, because it's about an American that goes to Canada to do the story, and there's a lot of sorry. Not even jokes, I'm just like commenting on how Canadians say sorry. And this one journalist kind of took offense. I think they were like lighthearted, but she kept bringing it up to the point where I think she may have really been offended. She's like, I'm just joking, but like seriously, we don't say that. and I realized, like, and I said, well, we're not really making fun of sorry. In fact, when I was a kid, and I had forgotten this, I used to say sorry, like sorry. I would say it like Canadians because I was such a big Michael J. Fox fan that I emulated him in every way. I tried to,
like, sorry, you know, like that kind of like.
He would say sorry because he was Canadian. Yeah. So, you know, in Family Ties or whatever, he listened. I don't think he said a boot. I think he had corrected that, but corrected. Right. He had changed that.
He now does it the right way.
Yeah.
Not like some crazy backward people.
What are you saying? about? But I think the sorry is something that even to this day, I sometimes will slip into it.
Just yeah.
And a lot of his, even his hand motion, like, I do this a lot. I use my hand. Doc, are you telling me? Like, there's a lot of,
I don't know what it is, because I remember, I saw it, I think, this is my memory of seeing it. This was crazy. I had this tradition. I would go to, like, sleepaway camp, and I would get back, and because I miss all the summer movies, like, I would pack them into one day. And I think I saw these three movies in one day. This is, like, a hell of a summer. I think I saw Back to the Future, Teen Wolf,
Whoa.
And Real Genius all in one day.
Oh, wow.
This is when movies were made the right way.
Teen Wolf, I loved. I mean, I still, those movies still hold up for me. I don't know what since seeing you that time, I actually lived out like a real childhood fantasy, like maybe like the top one. And I got to work with Michael J. Fox.
Really?
I did a part in his show, and I tried so hard. My big fear was that I would try so hard not to nerd out on him that I would like overcompensate.
Be aloof and an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that's the only direction I can head. If I went in a natural direction, I'd be like literally all over him.
Right.
I'm not misusing that the way people do. He was telling a story about casualties of war and like, I know. And I tried to hold myself back from being too, but everything he said, I relished. And then I realized like that I was being weird. I was like being like over listening, and so I tried to modulate behavior. But
you were like thinking way too much in this moment.
Just a lot of like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Like your reaction time's a little bit too quick.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep. Brought him home, right? 1987.
Yeah. Of war. I know that. And I didn't want to reveal that I knew too much about him because I didn't write his books and I know. just the stories you tell were like, great. It was surreal. And the other thing, I had an opportunity to meet him, but I always hesitate. That's why we were talking about Woody Allen and you got to sit down with him. But meeting your heroes, how dangerous it is. And I usually don't jump at the chances.
So if you're at a party and, okay, so who's another one outside of like Michael J. Fox that you put at that pedestal, you think?
I guess Steve Martin, I would say, is up there. And Martin Short.
Yeah. So again, if you see Steve Martin at a party, you would never go up to him?
I don't think so, just because he does seem like he's a real intellectual.
He in particular, yeah. Like, I don't know what you would, like, where do you go? Because the places you want to go, he doesn't want to go.
Exactly, and I've heard that about, that's why I'm so excited for you slash jealous that you got to have the Woody Allen thing, because I've heard that too about him, is that he's, you know, I would never go up to him and it would be too tempting to like really want to have a conversation.
So was Woody a big one for you growing up?
Oh, huge, yeah.
What were the big ones that...
I Love and Death was always one...
That's my favorite comedy.
Oh, really?
Literally of his.
No kidding.
Yeah. Obsessed.
My mother, ladies and gentlemen. The greatest. Olga Hampton was younger than younger Hampton.
Exactly. It's genius.
Genius.
Not enough people have seen Love and Death. I feel like it's a little bit... I mean, people know it, but like it's not in the pantheon.
Yeah.
It should be.
And my dad was a philosophy professor, and like he was into the existentialist, and so there... And all of that stuff.
Fields of wheat. Cream of wheat.
Rippling wheat. Oh, it's so good. I tell everyone about it. The Village Idiots
convention. Welcome Idiots.
Welcome Idiots. So good.
Genius.
People forget like the great kind of lower brow humor that Woody exhibited, and the slapstick, like Played Against Sam. There's the funniest sequence of things in that movie when he flings the record.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He flings it and he points it. He does this stuff.
Yeah.
It's so good. I recently rewatched Take the Money and Run, and I think that contains the single best physical comedy gag when he plays the cello in the marching band.
Marching band, yeah. Just keep sitting down.
He has to keep sitting and playing and running for it. So good.
That's brilliant. Also, I would venture to say brilliant, taking it back to your amazing, illustrious career. You talked to one of our guys recently about the film we all love, Galaxy Quest. Mm. It got a lot of attention. Like that article that like we did kind of like a, what is it, 15, 20 years on it, some kind of like milestone.
Yeah, great that you guys did that. That was awesome.
Yeah, I was psyched. I had nothing to do with it, but I was psyched that someone was smart enough to do it with you guys. So that was the first film, Galaxy Quest, right?
That was it. That was the first one.
That's crazy.
It was, I had done a pilot, and the sister of the woman who cast the pilot was casting Galaxy Quest. And so one of the first movies I auditioned for. And the first time I remember being in an audition with, like, what I, at the time, I thought I considered to be movie stars. There was, like, Eddie K. Thomas and Kieran Culkin and Tom Everett Scott. Those were the guys in the room. And I was like, I have no chance. These guys are, like, I was huge.
Were you into Trek or Star Trek at all? Not really.
No, I was a Star Wars guy. Okay. I was really into Star Wars and never into Trek. But I remember the day before we started shooting, and we'd been rehearsing a little bit with the director, or maybe I'd just done my first scene, and I said to the director of Galaxy Quest, I said, Dean, I feel like I'm doing a little too much, or like, because I was doing a little bit of, I was obsessed with Phil Hoffman in Boogie Nights at the time. I was just, you know, that scene where he's like, fucking idiot. That, like, I was just dropped out of college because I saw him in that and then, like, Happiness, and I was like, I gotta try it.
Yeah.
I gotta just see if I can do it. And so there was a little bit of Phil from that and, like, Comic Book Guy I was doing, like, you know, best episode ever. There was a little, it felt like sort of extreme. I look at it now and I'm like, it's not that extreme. It's kind of me. I'm just kind of playing myself. But at the time I was like, am I doing too much? And Dean gave me a documentary. He gave me Trekkies to watch.
Amazing doc, yeah.
Amazing documentary. And he said, take a look at this kid. And there's a kid in it whose name is Brandon.
Oh my God, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
His name's Brandon as well, and they kind of modeled the character.
That's fascinating.
And I saw this kid who's so committed to the show and to, you know, if the epaulets are 2 millimeters to the left, there's a big problem. And I thought, oh, shit, I'm not doing enough.
Right.
This guy's, this is a real guy.
Yeah. You met the great Sam Rockwell, I assume, on that one. Was that where the friendship began?
And that's the best part of that movie, was that I got to meet Sam, and Sam and I have become... Yeah, he's like a brother. Sam has become a really good friend. And then we actually became good friends. He was the one guy in that movie that kind of took me under his wing. And, you know, because I had never been to L.A. I had never, forget being in movies, I had never been, I don't think I'd been on a plane. I was like, and he took me out. He introduced me to Phil Hoffman, like, who was, you know, here. And, yeah, he really looked out for me, Sam. Still does.
I mean, you two share something that, like, I mean, we kind of alluded to in the beginning of talking about Tusk, is like, you'll go to extremes. Like, there's you throw vanity out the window. You're willing to make a fool of yourself if it will serve the scene.
Any comparison to Sam is very flattering. Yeah. I feel like I've learned from guys like that from watching. I mean, look how there's no vanity in the performances that I really love. Like Sam's, he had just done Green Mile, which is like, he's disgusting.
Right.
And Phil and Happiness is like jerking off on the bed. And like, there was no, these guys had no, it was almost like the uglier the better.
Right.
You know, and I never had any vanity. I've always admired that and, you know, been striving for something like that.
So was it relatively soon after that that you did Ed? Was that the next kind of extended, obviously big gig for you?
Because it was the Galaxy's Quest came as a result of the pilot that I did, and that pilot didn't get picked up, but the following year it did, and that became Ed.
Got it.
So it was that character. I got to play on that. Yeah.
So were you going out for was the goal at that time like get on a series? Was it like get anything? Was it just sort of like what were you going up for when you first kind of like out of Galaxy Quest?
When I first started out, my mom was an actress,
right.
And so I grew up with the mentality that you just take the jobs. You go, whatever job wants you, you like immediately say yes. And I don't know. I had no like delusions of grandeur. I had no ambition outside of, you know, doing plays and maybe if occasionally getting a commercial to
right.
pay the bills. And because that's what I knew. Those are the actors. All my mom's friends lived that life. And,
right.
you know, so... So the first few jobs were like radio voiceovers, and I was like so ecstatic about that. Then the pilot happened, and then Galaxy Quest, and then it was just I want to keep working, I want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
I did Galaxy Quest, then a summer camp movie called Happy Campers.
Right.
That we all thought would be all of us, you know, actors playing counselors. We all thought it would be our big like.
This is it.
You know, this is it.
We
did
it.
It was American Pie.
Like,
look what happened to those guys. Like, we're set. And I remember they played it at Sundance, I think a year or two later, and it was a studio movie, it was New Line, and we were up against Wet Hot American Summer, this movie called Wet Hot American, and I was like, whatever. And I was so snobby about it. I was like, oh, this is a little indie, we're this like big studio
right.
movie, and Wet Hot is like, to this day, one of my favorite movies. And like, Happy Campers kind of came and went, and so after Happy Campers, the show got picked up, and
right.
I started doing it.
Does it become easier to reconcile, like when you get some perspective on the business, like when you see a finished product and it's not what you imagined
yeah.
it to be, and you know, God, I still have to do the publicity, and
yeah.
I know it's not gonna,
yeah.
it's not gonna resonate because it's not working for me. But I mean, does that ever get a little bit easier, or is it always just a slog?
I really do try to separate it when that happens. If you're promoting something that you're not, you know. I try to find the positive in it, so
yeah.
it's not complete bullshit. So
yeah.
I'm not like ghost. I try to really hold on to, but it's some of these things are much easier. This is really easy
yeah.
to do because it's such a fun, great movie. It's one of the, it's something I'm more proud of than anything in a long, long time. And so, it's kind of like a relief to
yeah.
now finally be able to talk about it. But on the flip side, it's like I have fun doing whatever I find. I always try to find some joy in it, and I always think like, God, I'm so lucky to be.
Sure.
You know, I do have that. I know it's a thing that like you always have to stop and take a second, but I have it in, almost constantly, like in the back of my mind, like I could be in Syria, I could be, you know, I go there, so I'm always so it makes me a lot happier.
I thought you were gonna say I could be out of work, I could be in Syria. I could have Ebola.
On a series still, but in Syria.
Right. No, Netflix is doing a lot in Syria now.
Yeah, I go to those places.
Is the effort, because I know in recent years that you wrote a movie, I think you're working on another one now. I mean,
yeah.
was that something that you've been doing all along? Or again, is there a certain point where like, you know, it'd be a smart thing for me to start developing my own material?
It was a bit of both. It was that, it was like, this is what, and people I looked up to were doing that and they were generating their own stuff. And it was helping, because I think it's, you know, the business and the acting, you're hot one side, you're cold.
Yeah.
It really does fluctuate. And I was getting, I was getting a little tired of being at the mercy of that,
yeah.
you know, and the currency of cool in Hollywood, which is like, which dictates everything. I mean, like, which is why I was so appreciative of Kevin for reaching out to me, because Kevin is one of the few people who get to make movies who I feel are not necessarily beholden to that
right.
cool factor, and I just don't think he knows. I don't know. He just doesn't subscribe to it. But I feel at this point it's just in order to keep doing what I love doing, you kind of have to generate it on your own a little bit. And I found I loved writing. I mean, I love to improvise. And I had been doing it in several movies leading up to the one that we wrote, and the one that we're writing now, I'm actually really excited about.
Do you feel it's a badge of honor that you're probably the only actor that's worked with both Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan?
Yeah. In films? Some woman, I did the Andy Cohen show last night, and somebody in the audience said, they had questions from the audience, and she said, and she was sounding like a very sweet Southern lady, and she said, hi to everyone. I just have to ask you, if you could, in one word, just tell me, what was it like making out with Lindsay Lohan? And I was like, that took the weirdest turn. I thought you were going to ask me about, like, do I bake? You know?
How would you describe her breasts in one word?
Are they as buoyant and friendly as I imagine?
What did you say?
I said something like, goo. It was some weird sound. I couldn't think of a word, just one word. But yeah, Britney and the old...
I mean, both of them were also, the timing-wise, especially probably Britney at the time, that was like the height of insanity for her.
Yeah.
Did it feel like you were in the middle, like you weren't working with an actress, you were working with a brand at the time, and that it was...
It's funny, it did. There was a build-up all around it, and when I met her, she was in the makeup trailer, she was so just... sweet and Southern and kind of just, it was just disarming.
Yeah.
So all of that went out the window, and I was just talking to her, and we were making fart jokes and whatever you do, and right. You know, as you do. And
so you win the hearts of the actresses you're going to make out with?
Really charming. Hey, nice to meet you, Britney Spears. And yeah, for like 10 minutes. All right, nice to meet you. Yeah, that painted a weird picture of our first meeting. But But I saw her years later at, I saw her out at, it was some burlesque shows. I remember when like burlesque was like a thing for me. And, like, and she was having a rough time. It was during that, you know, that whole time.
Yeah.
We all know about it. You can flash to the images of it. It's chronicled. And I have such unbelievable sympathy for her because just having gotten a sliver of a fraction the people that the paparazzi are following you around, I can't imagine what that does at a certain level to your psyche, because I just can't imagine. So I'll preface this story by like saying I fully understand. I'm watching the show, and Brittany comes in with, and I hadn't seen her since we shot Crossroads. This was like 4 years in. She comes in with a bunch of friends, and she's in my eye line to the stage, almost. She's like off to this side. And I'm watching the stage, and she's facing away from the stage, she's facing out. And she's with her friends, and they're kind of drinking, and my friend was like, you should go over and say something. I was like, I'm not gonna say anything. And I kind of glanced over, and the strobe light's going, so it was a little hard to see. And I was looking at her, and I realized she was wearing, her dress seemed a little odd, just different. And I was like, huh. Like noticing the dress and the strobe light, it was like hard to see. And then I realized, this all happened within maybe 2 seconds. I realized that it wasn't her dress that was weird, it was that her boob was just out.
Sure.
Her friend realized that I was watching her dress and tried to immediately put it back into the thing. While I was somehow from across the room with strobe lights and burlesque trying to convey, like, I wasn't like, I didn't know it was a boom.
We worked together.
We were at Crossroads. It was a dress. I thought it was a design. So my friend afterwards is like, you gotta go say something to her. And at this point, I'm not like, I wanna like see her because it's been so long. I wanna almost maybe apologize to one of the friends.
Right.
So I went up to her, and the friends just like, closed in on her, like as I walked out, like the Imperial Guards, you know, like when the Emperor's walking out, just like, nope. And I was like, oh no, and one of the lamest moments of my life. I was like, we actually worked together. I just wanted to, and as I was like, I don't know how I was going to explain to the friend that I was just looking at, I didn't realize her boob was a Britney season. And he's like, oh hey, she was so sweet, like remembered, and nice person.
Wow, well, thank really you for nice. Taking us down a horribly awkward road that unintended in a sweet way. No, it was. I just felt cathartically in pain during that.
I needed to get it out.
Okay, good, good. Clearly you have Star Wars on the brain. We've talked about it a couple times. What do you think about Episode 7? How are you feeling? Feel
I am
confident?
So
feel good?
So much so. After hearing, I've been listening to Kevin Smith's podcast now, and he does one.
About goat visiting the set?
Yes, where he describes how emotionally he got from being there. And I trust him. Kevin's a very honest person. Like, I don't think he would have, he'd be like overselling. He has no reason to like oversell it. And Oscar Isaacs and the people that got to do it are like great actors. J.J. Abrams is awesome. Yeah. So anyone, how could it not be?
I know. Great. I have high hopes. How negative are you on prequels? Because last week's podcast was with Simon Pegg, who I've battled with over the years because, and this is going to sound controversial, I don't hate the prequels. I don't love them, but there are elements that I find all right.
There, like I said earlier, I can always find the good in things. Look.
You're like Luke. You see the good in your father that has turned.
Exactly. When I'm watching the prequels, I think, ugh. With the Jar Jar, but
with,
like
with the Jar Jar.
Not in Syria. That's what I heard. Michael Ian Black used to call me Jar Jar Binks, which was the most insulting thing.
Why would he call?
He thought I looked a little bit like him, I guess. Which I guess I do.
I'm just gonna say it. I'm not gonna do it because I've done it for so many people. But I do a really good Jar Jar Binks.
Oh.
Maybe I'll do it afterwards because I feel like I do it too much on camera now. And people are starting to hate me for it.
Okay, don't do it then. But,
Me so here.
Can you say me so horny?
Me so horny. Oh, more horny.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
That's really good.
Thank you.
Do you do any of the Frank Oz voice, any Muppets?
No, not really.
Because it sounds like...
I need to work on it. I've spent a lot of time developing that.
That's really good.
Thank you.
Shit. Well done.
You do voices quite well. You're a good mimic, clearly.
I enjoy it. I've always the only people that I really like. It's the highest form of flattery. I got, I got not in trouble from Matt Dillon, but a little bit like.
I feel like Matt Dillon wouldn't have a sense of humor about.
He does.
He's a little serious.
He is serious, but he was. We were on set, and I had been. He was talking to me about something. A Team America World Police had just come out.
Right.
And he was saying, hey man, I think it's too soon. He had a problem with the movies, and one of the makeup ladies came over to get me to go back to the trailer. And she said, "Justin, we need you back into the trailer." And I, oh, okay. She's like, "Oh, by the way, did you do your impression for Matt? Oh, he does an impression." And I was like, "And he's an intimidating guy."
Yeah.
So I was like, "No, I don't." And he's like, "What's this? Yeah, you do an impression?" And I was like, "No, I don't. Let me see it, man. I want to see it." So I did my impression of Matt for Matt, but I did like a half-hearted, want to be like, Matt does this a lot. Hey man, does like
it's keeping his bodily, like everything in place or
yeah,
what?
It's
like
just, I don't know if it's
grabbing at him.
I don't know what it is. He does, hey, listen man. and so he goes, I did it, and she's laughing, and he goes, it doesn't sound anything like me, man. Hey Sheila, come over here. And he called somebody over do it again, kid. Hey, listen to this. Does this sound like me? And I'm like, happy to do it. And then all these people kept coming around. Yeah, it does sound like me. No, man, it doesn't sound like me, man. But I've worked with him. I love him. I only do people that I like.
You must do Rockwell.
Yeah, I do a good Rockwell.
Let me hear Rockwell.
Well, you asked me something as Rockwell.
So when did you meet Justin? Do you remember the first time?
We met on Galaxy Quest. Yeah.
Are you proud of that movie?
It's fucking awesome. The movie's fucking awesome. Yeah, that was a good, I just did Green Mile.
Right.
And it was different, man. It was cool, it was cool.
Yeah, I feel like every time I see him, it's always like, hey, man. Like,
oh, hey, yeah. Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know that guy, Josh. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
That's disturbingly good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. In our remaining moments, you noticed the sketchy, weird Indiana Jones fedora. I don't just keep this here for... This is not part of my fashion. This has some random questions in it.
Okay. Great.
Should we do a few random questions?
Please.
Let's see what happens. You get to choose your own fate.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. When was the last time I cried? I got... teary. I didn't openly weep, but I did get a little teary during Boyhood.
Yeah, I can see that.
A few moments when Patricia Arquette says, I thought there would be more, and I thought, oh, geez, just thinking about it, yeah, Richard Linklater.
Good stuff. You want to do a couple more?
He got me again. I wish I were better at pool. I wish I could play pool well. I wish I were better at the guitar. A lot of things. I feel like Skilo. I wish I were a little bit taller. I wish I could grow better facial hair.
Yeah, exactly, the middle. Though.
Yeah, I really do, though. I mean, all joking, I wish I could grow. It'd be great to...
It was conspirator? Did you have any? Everybody had
that
crazy.
Was fake.
Was it fake?
Yeah. Okay. And that was Redford approved that.
Jaggedly. You're throwing Robert Redford on the bus now?
Bob. He made everyone call him Bob. That's how cool he was. That's the one thing when I showed up to set, I was like, what's he like? And everyone said the same thing. Like, he's going to make you call him Bob. Like, when you meet him, that the first thing he says is, please call me Bob. So I met him, and I had the mustache on. They were testing it, and he came and I think, hey, Justin. Hi, Mr. Redford. Thanks for being here. You're looking at the mustache. And he never corrected me and made me call him Bob. So first day on set, I'm like overusing his name. I'm like, okay, Mr. Redford. Thank you, Mr. Redford. Right over here, Mr. Redford. Waiting for like him to, and I'm like getting paranoid. Like, does he not, what is it about me? I mean, like everyone, PAs, craft service guys, yeah. Like, hey, Bob. And I'm still with Mr. Redford. And like a couple days in, I said, Mr. Redford. And he said, Justin, in front of everyone, Justin, please, it's Bob. I told you. Call me Bob. And he was like kind of offended.
Oh, wow.
As if he had told me. And I was like, oh, you didn't tell. Anyway, what's your question? And but he had. He had never told me.
I would have remembered. Screaming, call me Bob. The one time Redford was
storms up. Fucking kid won't call me Bob. It's too goddamn formal.
sorry, man. Finish strong.
Oh, okay. Karaoke? Question mark. Please.
Really?
Yeah. Neil Diamond, Johnny Cash.
Are you competitive, or is it about the fun?
No. It's just about. I do a version of Jolene. Kind of a deeper version.
You and Dolly basically have the same vocal.
Yes.
Range, right?
Yes. Similar. We've often been compared.
Have you ever been to Dollywood?
No, but I just got
about it.
I got a question about her wrong on some other show. They said Dolly Parton's boobs. How big are they? And I guessed triple D's.
Okay.
And I guess they're just double D's.
Huh.
And so I never thought I'd have that moment where I thought Dolly Parton's flatter than I thought. She's a little flatter. Those two often don't go.
Yeah,
in the same. Those thoughts don't go in the same sentence.
What show was that?
It was
Sesame Street.
What was it? Yeah, it was the Blue's Clues. Yeah.
It's always a pleasure to see you, my friend.
I have always
a blast talking to you. If for no other reason that we proselytized Love and Death today, as well as Tusk.
Yeah, good. Both important
movies.
Yeah.
No, congratulations. Tusk is honestly it's insane. It is unique. It's fun. It is super disturbing.
Yeah.
And you guys did a great job with it.
Thank you.
It's good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.